from WCAI in Woods Hole and WGBH Radio Boston, this is Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. The Stop and Shop strike may be over, but one of the issues at the heart of the tension is just getting started, and that's automation. Robots are playing an ever larger role in the workforce, not only at Stop and Shop, but also at major retailers like Walmart and Amazon. Recent studies have estimated that tens of millions of Americans stand to lose their jobs to automation in the next decade. The question is, which jobs, and how should those at risk prepare or respond? Many have predicted that repetitive, low-skill, low-education jobs are most vulnerable, but my next guest says it's more nuanced than that. Beth Humbert is Assistant Professor of Management at UMass Lowell. She and her colleague Scott Latham have produced a new tool to assess whether or not your job is likely to be taken over by a robot. Beth, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
There's this old rule of thumb that I've heard that robots are well suited to jobs that are dull, dirty, or dangerous. We know where robots currently are in the workforce, places like Amazon's distribution centers, where they are doing jobs that are repetitive, boring, potentially dangerous. Why is it so hard to predict where they are going to be in the future and which jobs are most at risk?
I think dull, dirty, dangerous. I would maybe take out dirty, and we'll talk a little more about that. But I think it's hard to predict because nothing is ever as simple as that, right? To your point, it's often easy for some of the predictions to be anchored on things like low skill, low wage, low education. And in our own work, we started to feel like there was much more, as you said, nuance or detail that was missing. And we don't know. It's robots now, but what is it going to be in 20, 30 years? So we think our perspective is at least flexible and a little more sustainable than some of those current prescriptions.
Well, we certainly will dive into exactly what it is that you're predicting and how you're looking at this. But first, I want to talk a little bit more about how it has been done. And you said there have been these kind of high level, you know, assessments that say, okay, low wage, low education jobs, those are the ones that are most vulnerable. But you also say that a lot of these past or current prognostications about automation tend to pit one group of workers against another. What do you mean by that? And what's the problem that you see there?
Again, it's this idea of more nuance than that. And so I think if you look at some of the headlines, and perhaps part of it is for clickbait purposes, but it is often saying, if you are in this group, and insert highly educated, professional, make more money, have more varied skills, you will be better off than this other group, and insert the opposite, whether it be less educated, low wage. The problem here is that jobs, organizations, industries, professions are too varied to do those broad groupings. You know, and the one thing I will say is some of that motivation may be that, of course, when automation happens, we maybe get more concerned for folks that are in lower paying jobs that have less education because they may have less alternatives. And so I certainly appreciate and care about that as well. But sitting in institutions of higher ed, our approach is often, well, what should we be telling these students that are graduating? And so rather than coming at it in terms of these broad groups and pitting them against one another, it's more about, well, what can we offer individual workers going forward in terms of this guidance?
Well, Beth Humbert, to that point, you have devised kind of a new framework, a new way of thinking about which human jobs might be most vulnerable to automation. And at the center of that is a word that we all have some sense of, but that can be kind of vague, and that's value, the value of your job. So how do you define value?
If you think of an individual job, every job is sort of an economic proposition. It provides value to some end user. And so here, when we're talking about value, it's not the value of an individual employee, him or herself, but it's at the level of the job. What is the usefulness or worth of this job? And then we break that usefulness or worth up into two pieces: skills, which is still part of it, but then also the way in which that value is delivered.
Yeah. So talk a little bit more about that mode of delivery and how important that is. You actually pose one really interesting example. Your own job as a professor probably falls into the category of high education, high skill, relatively high wage. So current predictions would tend to say a pretty safe job from the standpoint of automation. And you say, maybe not so much if you actually look at this delivery piece, not just the skills piece.
Exactly. My co-author on the piece, Scott Latham, likes to use a lot of euphemisms, so I'll borrow one of his here. We have to eat our own dog food. So we thought as we were coding these, you know, our research was induced by coding a number of professions, and of course, we introspected and looked at ourselves as professors. So skills are part of it, right? And that's where we talked about this already. A lot of the conversation is if the skills are routine, if they're standardized, if they can easily be repeated over and over, yeah, they're more likely to be targeted by automation. But the other piece that we argue is sort of separate from the skills and also could be targeted by automation, whether or not the skills are, is this form of delivery. So that worth or usefulness is delivered to an end user. And so how it's delivered to the end user may be more or less threatened by automation. And so I'll try to bring that alive by using myself as a professor. For example, we would suggest the value of a professor is disseminating and offering knowledge in a particular area. The skills that I need to create that value is I need to have deep expertise in a domain. And likely that's not going to be automated. So that we should be safe. But we're already seeing the way that value, the way that expertise is delivered, threatened by automation or threatened by technology in the first place, you know, with the proliferation of online modes of learning and online education going forward. There was actually just an article I saw by the World Economic Forum 2 days ago showing how robots can deliver that material, how, you know, professors might be sitting in a dark room sort of managing the artificial intelligence and inputting the information, but it's being delivered in a much more automated fashion. And so it's not that the job of a professor is threatened overall, but it is threatened if the individuals in that job can't acclimate to these new modes of delivery.
Well, Beth Humbard, let's kind of jump to the punchline. The most pressing question, of course, is if you take this framework of value, considering both skills and delivery, the people who are most vulnerable to automation are those whose jobs, both the skills and the delivery, could be easily and efficiently automated. What are those jobs?
Yep, so you're exactly right. Certainly there are folks that are not in a good place given the current wave of technology. I'll give a couple of maybe the counterintuitive ones that are those higher educated professionalized jobs, something like a pharmacist. So this actually came about because there were discussions at our university of starting a pharmacy program a few years ago. And my co-author sat on some workforce boards and we would talk about this. Is that lucrative for the university, but more so, can we sleep well at night letting students into a program that we think in the next 10 years the profession is going to be seriously threatened? And so I'll just walk through that. What's the value of a pharmacist? Reading a prescription and dispensing medication to a consumer. You could also say giving them advice. Some people would say, oh, well, you ask the pharmacist questions. You could include that in the value. The skills there then are to really follow closely a routine standardized offering that a doctor may give, to gather the medicine, to put it into a bottle, and to turn around and hand it to the clerk at the technician that then hands it to the customer. So the skills are threatened because it's something that actually there's articles out there that show robots can do that more accurately with less errors than humans. And then the mode of delivery is already threatened. I mean, how many of us use mail order pharmacy? We don't go to the brick and mortar CVS pharmacy as much as we used to. And so again, right now we're still in that transition zone, but you can imagine over the next 5 to 10 years, that's a job that the skills and the delivery are going to continue to be threatened by more sophisticated automation.
Well, Beth Humbard, by working with these two different aspects of a job, both the skills and the mode of delivery, as you've said, you create more nuance, right? It's not just a list of safe jobs and vulnerable jobs. You've got really safe, you've got almost definitely displaced, and then you've got, well, your skills are a little threatened or your delivery's a little threatened. You've got this big gray area in the middle. But I wonder if you kind of look on the whole, how different are your projections than the others that have been based on these more traditional assessments of just, you know, low wage or low education, low skill?
I think that some of these areas in that durable quadrant, which is our category where they're generally, for the time being, safe in terms of skills and delivery, is where some of that difference falls. So blue-collar workers, for lack of a better word, and another category that's thrown out there, would qualify under what you initially said, that dirty, right? What was it? Dull, dirty, and dangerous. Dirty and dangerous, and some may say dull.
You know, a plumber, an electrician, that kind of
exactly. Trades. Yeah. Plumber, electrician, the trades. In fact, Scott and I were just out with a individual who runs a machine shop up near Lowell, where we are, last week, saying, he's like, I need your article. I need to bring this out to the trade schools. We need more folks coming into these professions because they're hearing this hysteria around automation. And even one of the trade schools he usually works at just cut in half the space devoted to their machine shop because they feel like it's a dying profession. And so I think it is some of those hands-on blue-collar jobs that have a lot more ambiguity in the context and need for human delivery of the value than we realize.
Yeah, I mean, we don't necessarily want a robot. A robot can probably wire up a device on an assembly line, but we don't necessarily want a robot in our house trying to pull wires from the basement up to the bathroom. And it wouldn't necessarily be an effective use of automation. You know, it wouldn't be easy to automate that kind of task.
Exactly. Yeah. And I'll give two pieces on that. One, you make a really good point that part of this value delivery involves consumer preference, right? The consumer, whether it's internal or external to the organization, is the one receiving the value. And you made a point there that we don't feel okay with this, right? So if a consumer is never going to feel okay with a robot electrician coming in the home to wire their home, that's never going to be threatened. But even more so, to your second point, we're located in New England, you and I. Drive down any street in New England, and these homes are not cookie-cutter homes. Some have electrical systems that are still from the 1950s. Some are brand-new developments. And so there is a lot of ambiguity in the context. And so not only would it be cost-effective to have a robot do it, is it even possible? And so I would say that area is one where I think some of our prescriptions are quite different than maybe others that you see out there.
So Beth Humbird, how can individuals use this new framework? You call it a tool, but is there some 10-question quiz you can take to, you know, put in the specifics of your job and figure out how vulnerable it is to automation? Or is this more of kind of an introspective exercise? How do you actually put this into action?
Wow, really great point that I'm going to share with Scott as soon as I get off. Yeah, right now it is this introspective exercise. I mean, we've run, like I said, some workshops for students, for professionals, but I love that idea. Could we come up with a little bit more nuance to our point, 10, 15 questions that help you think about, for example, are your skills routine? Do you do the same thing every day? Is the context in which you work look different today than it did yesterday? You know, that would be the electrician, the ambiguous context. So that's something we could consider. And I think we probably would be excited to, because again, one of our goals here was, you know, there's a lot of guidance out there for organizations. How can you integrate automation, AI, robots for cost reducing mechanisms or efficiency? And there was a lot less out there for individuals to try to think about, where am I right now? Where is my career heading? And what does that mean for me? You know, as I read all these scary headlines that robots are taking all of our jobs in the next 10 years. So we do see it as a tool for individuals. And I love your idea of kind of trying to make it a little bit more accessible for analysis by individual job holders.
Well, Beth Humbird, when you have that tool, let us know. We'll have you back and we'll workshop everybody's jobs on the air. Beth Humbird is an assistant professor of management at UMass Lowell. She and her colleague Scott Latham have developed a new framework for figuring out whether or not your job is likely to be taken over by a robot. Beth, thanks so much.
Thank you. I enjoyed the time.